to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, Brains.
Coming to you straight from San Diego, California, let's welcome our host, April Mahoney.
I had to have my pointer. You know, today is my day to kick back and just really kind of enjoy my guests, you know, and feel the feels, because that's what we're going to do today. We have Alicia Hurt. But we ain't going to feel no pain, okay? Because this sister is in it to win it. And I am so excited to have her here in the house with us. Where we at? On the edge. What we say? This is the place where the conversation is pointed. The guests are sharp. And the responses are never dull. You are in for a treat today, Brains. Okay? We got Alicia here with us. Let me get myself together here so I can enjoy this. We're going to have a conversation about mental health. Oh, yes. Because she is a clinical therapist. She's worked in corrections. She's worked with men, women, and children. We're going to talk about the disparities. We're going to talk about the misdiagnosis. We're going to talk about how somebody can go into a grocery store and kill up 10 people, buy the gun 6 days in advance, and be treated with dignity and respect. And we flare our arms and raise our voice and we gun down in the street like rabid dogs. We're going to talk about that too. But in the end, we're going to have a poetry reading. Oh yeah, she's a poet too. And we know it. I'm so excited to have her here. We've been waiting for this for a long time. She was a little apprehensive about being on the edge. I convinced her. She won't be sorry. My Brains love you. They love you already. So Brains, help me welcome Alicia Hurt to the show. Hi, baby.
Hey, thank you so much. I'm excited to be here. I was a little apprehensive, but hey, I'm here. I'm here showing up strong.
That's right. You know, you got to get in where you fit in, and that's right, that's here right. On the edge.
That's right.
So tell us where your story began before you started working in this mental health thing.
I would say my story began with the day I decided that I was going to choose college as opposed to military. And I think that's where my journey started. So I didn't know what I wanted to go into. I didn't know where my life, that journey would take me, you know, and then, you know, I decided on social work and, you know, and throughout college, you know, you do your internships, you do things like that, but I'm telling you, those platforms really don't prepare you for really what's happening. And things have changed so much over the years. I mean, I've been in it for over 30 years, dating myself, but it's been over 30 years. And I've seen things. I've seen and heard and witnessed and been a part of things that are so saddening. It's elevating at times because you know you change as an individual. I know I change people's lives, families' lives, individual lives, but at the same time, I seen a lot fall through the cracks. So that's pretty much my journey, you know, prior to and into the system and where I am now.
Well, it's systematic. And yes, at the end of the day, it's about money. If you got money, you can get the specialized service for your child. You can go into a rehab program. You can have support and get a job afterwards. But if you are underlooked and underserved, it's sad.
It's really sad.
And you look at the population of disenfranchised. I hate to call them homeless, you know, because we all one paycheck short of being homeless.
It can happen. Yes, we are. Okay. Yes.
But I look at Los Angeles. I'm originally from LA. Shout out to LA.
LA.
But it's crazy. You know, downtown, you see these multi-million dollar skyscrapers. I mean, each floor you go up, you pay an extra $1,000. And then you look out your window and it looks like a war zone.
Yes.
And people have become comfortable with that. And they have this assumption that everyone with mental health issues is a drug addict, you know, mm-hmm. or they're mm-hmm. a crook or a criminal. But with all that said, it's real hard to approach homeless because you don't know, and you don't know the degree of mental illness, and you don't know when they're going to go from a flicker to a flame.
Right.
Okay. How do you feel comfortable in this situation? Because again, people say I'm not judgmental. Well, I'm judgmental because my judgment is my boundary. It is my warning sign. That's mm-hmm. not to say I won't help you, mm-hmm. okay? But I am judgmental. How do people find comfort in this? I mean, because again, it's very, very difficult.
Well, I'm going to tell you the truth. You know, just as judgmental as you said that you were, so are they. So their life has been about resilience and or the lack of, and always running from something or trying to find something. So you have to, when you approach them, that's what you're thinking about, because they're just as afraid of me as I am of them.
Wow.
And you have to take that when you go in. And you got to meet them where they are.
Right.
So that's the key too. You don't want to go up to them showing them that you in a Ferrari. No, I'm going to meet them where they are because they don't want to feel looked down on.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So no, I myself personally have been homeless before, but suppose I have not. So you got to be able to relate to them in some sort of manner. Mm-hmm. And that's the key, right? They have to feel your presence, mindfulness in that moment, that you understand where they're coming from and where you want to help them to go.
Because I'm going to tell you, you know, Mr. Magnificent gets on me all the time. Mm-hmm. He says, baby, you can't just be doing that. I said, yes, I can be doing that because they feel my heart.
Mm-hmm, that's
I don't see somebody walking up to me saying to me, Miss Lady, can you help me? If I see that you need something to eat, I just tell the lady, put it on my bill, you know, and then mm-hmm. I'm gonna give you $2 or $3 so you can get you some dinner. Mm-hmm. You go over to the liquor store and you get you some zigzags or you get you a little short dog. That might be what you need to get yourself through. I'm not gonna judge you on that.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. I'm not gonna do that. You know, you might be trying to get enough money together to get a room for you and your kids at night.
That's right.
So people don't know what your story is. And everybody is not trying to get you. But what do you think about this defunding the police? Now, see, I'm concerned about that because the reason why I bring that up is because the police, when you call them, there's a problem. You've been calling them for milk and cookies.
That's right. That's right.
There's some drama going on. But they see murder, mayhem, lies, destruction all day long.
That's right.
Their psyche is, you know, it's more than the judgment.
It's pumped up. Yes.
Okay. So you approach somebody and they don't have the skill set for this. I believe that instead of defunding the police department, that you should pour more money into it to get people like you, social workers, therapists, to go out and do a perk visit, to have someone in the car with you that understands and knows how to assess this. Don't you agree?
I agree. So, and I'm so glad you said that because, all right, let me answer your first question. What I feel about defunding. That is not the route to take. It's about, now if you have everywhere, there's going to be a bad seat. All right, so we can get that out the way, right? But I agree with you. There are people like myself that you contact in that moment because if they don't have the training in mental health, then how are they supposed to do their job? Because everybody, like you said, are not drugs addicts. They're all not criminals. But there's something deep down that's going on to get them to the point that they are, that they had to be called out and shot down in the streets or put in jail for the rest of their lives. If you had just figured out or had someone there to figure out. And sorry for the pen, I'm a writer, so it's with me all the time.
Do your thing.
That's right.
I got a pointer.
That's right. That's right. But if someone was there to help diagnose the situation,
right?
Do they belong? Do they belong in a place, or do they belong there with everybody viewing them getting thrown on the ground and handcuffed? No, maybe they need somebody to talk to figure out why they're at where they escalated to where they are. So I so agree with that. No defunding, but fund for mental health expertise.
Absolutely.
In the police department.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, it's scary. Because again, mm-hmm. like I said, somebody can go from a flicker to a flame.
Yes.
Okay. Now this person, again, I don't know, but he has 6 days to premeditate how he's going to kill these people in this grocery store in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. George Floyd, he is calling for his mama for 8 minutes because somebody had a knee on his neck, you know? So there's mm-hmm. disparity there. And it always has been. But I say this, brains, I take a hit for the team. We're the chosen people. To whom much is given, much is required. That's what I say. And it's a struggle, and the struggle is real.
Struggle
and men, especially, men are proud. They are not going to come out and say, you know what, I think something's wrong. I think I need to see a psychologist, a psychiatrist. You know, women are a little bit more willing and supportive. Okay, I'm getting this look on your face. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. But I want to elaborate on that a little bit about women. Okay. Yes, men are the strong. They went out there. They do the things. They protect their families. And no, they don't want to. They don't want to seem vulnerable and need that assistance. Right.
Right.
So I agree with that. But in order to, I challenge them in order to do that. It takes a strong man to say, I need help.
All right now.
Right?
That's right.
So secondly, the women, we have carried so much over generations. We have carried so much on our backs, the loads that we carry. One of them is supporting that man that's going out there doing that.
Right.
Right? So we are also taught, keep that in the room.
Right.
Keep that. Don't let that noise be out on the street about this family, what's going on behind these doors. And so all of that is internalized for generations, for decades, over the years. And so now with everything that's going on in the society, in the world, mm-hmm. all that is starting to hit the fan, and you're seeing the escalation of things that were laid dormant for a while, really.
Generational trauma.
Yes, generational trauma. That's exactly what it's called. And it's now starting to really show its evil face. And now is the time to really get help, because we need to, you know, we as people, we don't really come together and help each other. That's a whole different story, but it's always competition over collaboration type situations right. going on, right?
And who's going to come up? Who's going to be the winner?
Yeah, who's going to be the winner? So now all of us need to be the winners. That's the only way that we're going to make it through this. That's the only way. And if you have emotional trauma, if you have a mental illness, and you mentioned at the top about misdiagnosis, but that right there is a whole show in itself.
It's okay? A whole show in itself. Let me tell you some stories. Yeah. I got a friend, brains, two people. Okay. First one is, dear friend of mine, grew up with him, was in the military. Mm-hmm. I look on the internet, they didn't have to take him off the plane. He done stripped butt naked.
Mm.
On the plane. Took him off. He had all these different mental challenges, and they started giving him injections. They couldn't regulate the injection that they was giving him. Unfortunately, he ended up hanging himself in his mama's garage. Second situation, my nephew. Shout out to O. I love you, dude. Okay. Incarcerated his entire life. He was diagnosed with ADHD, bipolar, and schizophrenia at the age of 8 years old. Okay. Mama didn't have the resources. She a young mama. She didn't have the resources to get him the help that he needed. In these programs for behavioral dysfunction, isolated, drugged. I went to go see him one time. He didn't know who I was, couldn't talk. Because he was on these meds. Then he didn't know how to respond. She didn't know how to respond. She's over-medicating him. Long story short, he gets out a life of crime. He didn't know how to use a mailbox. He did not know, didn't know how to put the money in the coin laundry. I get emotional. Didn't know how to put the money in the coin laundry. Okay? Dysfunction because he's been kept as a caged animal his entire life. He does not know how to blend in with society. He got out. He'd been out about 8 or 9 months. He right back there, called on the phone. It seemed like he back at Disneyland because this is his tribe. This is his people. This is what he knows. And people that have never been incarcerated don't know that. But I want you to know that every single family on the planet's got somebody that's got a mental illness and that has been in jail. And if you tell me otherwise, you're a liar.
And you're right.
More prevalent in the Black and Brown communities because there's a shame associated with it. We don't talk about that. You know, this person or that person, we don't talk about that. You better start talking about it.
Yeah.
Okay. You got guns in the house. You know, you got folks stealing money. And then they self-medicate. Okay, Alicia, they self-medicate because they know something's wrong, but they're trying to get the edge off of them.
Yeah.
You're taking something to keep you up, somebody giving you something to keep you down. You never level out.
You never level out. It's got to be a balance there. It's got to be a balance. And the thing of it is, I mean, there was a few key points of what you were just explaining. And let me tell you something. At 8 years old, you cannot be diagnosed with schizophrenia, but that's a whole different story as well. But let me tell you something. Throughout, we have dealt with, of course, so much, but you know, most of our issues are neurological, meaning if we deal with the mind as to what's going on in our heads, a lot of these behaviors would not occur anyway, right? So over the generations, back in those days, if a lot of these things were addressed then, we wouldn't be in the situation we are in now. So then again, you have these generational traumatic things that's going on, and there's the shame that you mentioned, right? There's the I'm less than type situations going on. So that's why we need to step up and say, I don't want this to be in the next generation. I want to stop this cycle. I want to stop these patterns of behaviors that's going on that's causing us to practically fill up the grave sites or fill up the jail sites. And that's where we are. And that is horrifying. And I want to be a part of changing that whole situation.
But this these privatized jails, okay? I hear the new administration is supposed to, break that off because they're making a whole lot of money.
Yes, they are.
You know what hurt me more than anything is that women did not have sanitation. And I didn't really realize that till I started watching The Orange is the New Black. And then I met the author of the show and we was talking. So what do? Philanthropic me. I go out, I talk to some people that I know at Procter & Gamble. I get all these sanitation, pack them up. Sent them to the jail. You know, they wouldn't accept them. Sent them back. Sent them back because they want people to work and they want the little restitution and money that the family's sending on the books. They want you to buy them. That's a quality of life issue.
Yeah.
So in these privatized jails, they're not doing nothing. They're not probably not even letting people medicate one another. They're putting you in isolation, letting you scream, holler, and talk to 20 different people, sweating, no blankets, no food. Mm-hmm. It's horrible, brains.
It's horrible. And what you're describing is reality. It is reality. And, you know, And throughout my journey, you know, I hear, you know, it's in the best interest of the client. It's in the best interest of the, and at the end of the day, it never was. Now, I will say, in the beginning, when I started this journey, I saw how it was about the people. But I'm telling you, as time has, but I will say this too. The people who start these agencies and organizations and everything, I truly don't know if they the people that understand the generational trauma. Hmm. And I'm going to put it like that.
Or lack of cultural sensitivity.
And that's where I'm going. The lack of cultural sensitivity, right? So, you know, I'm not questioning a person's genuineness. Mm-hmm. I'm not questioning that. I'm just saying you have to understand the culture. You have to understand what general you know, the trauma. You have to understand, because you know this is a cultural thing. It's not a one family, it's not a this family over there. This is a blanket thing that occurred. You know what I mean? So it's just like you have to, it's in us, it's innate what has happened over the generations. Right. So you have to understand that.
But okay, but like reparations. Mm-hmm. I don't give a damn about no 40 acres and a mule.
Okay? Right.
I need you to handle business right now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I need you to handle business right now. Okay, so where do we begin? You've got parents that've got kids that are diagnosed with a whole bunch of stuff.
Let's go. Mm-hmm.
First thing the school want to do is medicate them so that can keep them quiet, so that they can, you know, they got 28 kids and you got 15 of them medicated, sitting there like zombies. Mm-hmm. So you go mm-hmm. with the other 13. Okay, so what do parents do? What do parents do when they're seeing signs? Because bad is bad, and we all been bad, okay? You can't whoop a kid no more because they call the police on you.
Police on you quick, yes.
Okay?
Yes, they do. Don't,
but there's a lot going on. And you know what I'm noticing too, Alicia?
What's that?
So many boys, and I'm noticing this because I've been with a few of my friends, white and black, are really struggling with mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What, is this genetic? Is it, you know, and I know that you can't speak on this. I don't want to put you in no awkward predicament. Is it the immunizations they're getting? Is it in the water? What, and why is it really attacking boys so much?
Well, I would say that it is genetics. So we can start there. And is genetic in the sense that, first of all, it's going to happen. That means it can be, you could have three or four kids, right? Mm-hmm. And it affects one of them and not the other three. That's just the way it happens. But when you start seeing signs, then that's when you need to start contacting resources mm-hmm. to help. But the resources that you contact, I hope they really advocate for you and not for the green dollar. I'm just going to say that. Now, I will also say the way they will manage one particular person may be different in how they manage the other.
Right.
Right. And so we can see that anyways. So I would say to a parent who's recognizing something is going on with their child, contact whoever you can, a resource, that you feel comfortable with, but ask questions.
Right.
That just don't accept. I'm not saying go to one place to another, get second opinion, third opinion, right. fourth. I'm just saying ask questions and advocate for yourself and for your child. Don't just take, they're diagnosed with 15 different things. Don't just take, I'm going to give you 15 different medications. Don't accept that. Always ask questions right. before. Do your own research.
Right.
That's key. Do your own research.
And as a parent, you know, you can't overthink it.
Right.
You know, you can't overthink it, but document it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm seeing certain signs. I'm seeing certain, you know, conversations. I'm seeing certain patterns of behavior. You know, they're despondent. They're not reacting. And another thing, you can't live up in my house with the door shut. I don't give a damn. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go in there. I'm going to go through your drawers. I'm going to go mm-hmm. through your backpack. I'm going to go through your phone. If I'm paying mm-hmm. for it, oh, I'm going to know what's going on. You ain't going to have no guns up in my house.
Right. Okay? Exactly.
And exactly. And then all of a sudden something happens. You're not going to mm-hmm. have these little strange friends that I've never seen. I don't know who they mm-hmm. are. They ain't going to be coming up in my house.
You got to be involved.
I would take your door off the hinges.
Yes. You got to be involved. You got to be involved in your child's life. And you know, females as well, but men, you know, they're out there, they're getting killed at alarming numbers. You know, females are as well, but these Black men are getting killed at alarming numbers.
Right.
And by people that we feel like is our safety nets, and they're not. So
I don't understand this. You know, and mm-hmm. I have to speak from a cultural perspective, brains. I can only talk about Black people because that's who I really know. That's what I am. But why is it that I just see this as a pattern? These mass shootings are mostly done by young white males. Blacks, you know, drugs, killed by the police, gang violence. I don't understand what it is. And they're supposed to be privileged, you know. We got the best schools.
You just said it.
They're not paying attention. Their parents ain't paying attention.
You just said it. They were privileged. And they went through life being privileged with the smack on the hands and things like that.
Wow.
They are, trust me, there is some mental illnesses there. Maybe not all of them, but there's something down in the generation to get them where they are. Mm-hmm. And these things were seen when they were kids. They have gone to in front of judges. They may have gone to these little behavior places and things like that,
mm-hmm.
but they weren't locked up for 10, 15 years.
Right. Well, no
there were no consequences. If you think about those and research those kids and these men that are committing these shooting crimes and things, you will see that there is trouble down through the years, and that all they got was if a smack on the hand. That's why you see that.
Wow. Well, we have to wake up, okay? Because nothing mm-hmm. comes to a sleeper but a dream, brains. And it's like we're living in a damn nightmare.
Yes, you know? It is.
We get rid of one nut that was running the White House, and then everybody else is, you know, left out at the funny farm. You need to pay attention. You need to have responsibility. There's no shame associated with it. The hardest part about mental health is that you can't see it.
Mm-hmm.
I can see a cut on my face. You can see the signs of cancer. You can feel the fatigue of fibromyalgia or heart disease, but you can't see what's inside somebody's brain. That's why we're on the edge. That's why we talk about it. That's why we go deep. Because I want you to look for the signs and the symptoms and get you some help. Mm-hmm. There's help out there, you know. I'm loving it now in schools. They're teaching the kids more about mindfulness and EFT tapping. I was tapping the other day. I was upset about something, started tapping. They're teaching them mindfulness instead of putting them in the corner. They're having them do some meditation. You know, it's soul work.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the soul work that you do. Girl, you a poet.
I am.
I'm a poet too. Well, I'm gonna let you do the thing. Tell me a little bit about poetry and what that means to you and how that gets the stress of everyday, you know, coping off of you, and you put that passion on paper with a pen.
So since 10 years old, I was 10 years old. And let me tell you this story. When I wrote my first poem, they had ISS. They still have that these days. I believe they do.
What was ISS? Okay.
So that's in school suspension, right? So I had gotten in trouble because I got into a little conflict with this young lady, and I said a curse word, right? So they put me in ISS. So I was there for 3 days, and I just decided to start writing. I'll never forget it. I wrote this poem called Boredom. And I read that thing. I kept it for a long time, but of course I can't find it now. But that's when I really started. I was like, oh, wow, I'm a writer. You know, so that's when I started writing my poetry and everything. And it used to be at one point I was writing poems for other people, you know, as a little hobby or, you know, side hustle type thing. But I got to realize, and then I really got into Maya Angelou as well. She is my muse when it comes to poetry, right? And her integrity and things like that. And so I was like, I don't really want to monetize this because that's not what it's for me. So I started using it as a coping skill. We want everybody to have a coping skill, right? So that was truly became my outlet, just to write poetry. And I also use it as an inspirational tool for people. When I see things happening like these shootings and killings and just heartache and heartbreak, poetry is what I use to try to really uplift people. And that's where I am with it. And sometimes when I'm just writing my darkest moments, sometimes I like to share those with people as well, because I never know who it could help.
Do you ever get woke up? Girl, I get woke up by the spirit in the middle of the night. I have a pen and paper next to me, and I mean, I can write some cold-blooded stuff. I haven't really kind of put my new poetry out in a while because it's been real heavy. And I don't know if everybody got a crane. Everybody can't carry this because it'd be some deep stuff, okay? It'd be deep. Yeah. So share with us one of your poems. I would love to hear it.
Sure. I would love to read it to you all. So
okay. Give us a little introduction.
All right.
And enjoy.
Now this year, if you all know, the name of my coaching business is Elevational Mental and Emotional Health Coaching, right? So when I wrote this poem, I named it Elevate because I feel like this it's all about my coaching and what it's all about. So let me read it to you real quick. Elevate. As I prepare for a new year of life, I think about my past and I ponder my future. I've made mistakes and I wouldn't have it any other way. Yes, I want more. And this year, I will only vision big. I dare to take risks. I dare to release my inner fears. Shouting to the masses, I am humble. I am strong. Forget the discomfort of defeat, mistreatment, and submission. This year, I only will thrive for the passion to live the life I deserve. Life is poetry that breathes. Fortune is to live an abundant life. Life is a dream that comes true. Elevate is to live the life that God predestined for me. Life is prayer of hope and wisdom. You are the diamond in the rough. Elevate.
Grace, did you hear what she said? She's asking you to join her in taking it to the next level. to understand your purpose, mm-hmm. and to dream the impossible dream, to grab hold to it. Like I said, nothing comes to a sleeper but a dream or a nightmare, okay? And it's time to elevate. I mean, COVID was the perfect pause.
Yes.
God showed up and showed out, okay? The whole entire world, not just New York, not just LA, not just the overlooked and underserved. I don't care how pretty you was. I don't care how thin you are. I don't care how much money you had. You had to stop and think mm-hmm. about who you are and what you do. That was powerful, my sister. That was powerful. I can't wait for the book. I cannot wait for the book. What has this whole experience with COVID taught you about being a better human being?
It taught me, and it sounds cliche, but it taught me life is short.
Hmm.
And when I mean that thing hit me hard, just seeing people, 500,000, over 500,000 just leave this earth.
Wow.
Leave this earth. Life is short. You know, and I think back at 3 years ago, I had a stroke as a result of my job, literally as a result of my job. Wow. While on the job.
Wow.
3 years ago. And I start thinking then, I'm like, you know, I ain't having this, but I was angry.
Right.
But when I realized I got over the anger and I felt like it's time to elevate. It's time to do something with my life. Because no more will I allow myself to be in a position where I have a stroke. Right? So I said, it's time to elevate. And it's time to help other people elevate as well. So they won't be CEOs. They won't be business owners and entrepreneurs in their family. I don't want to see them have a stroke. I don't want to see them lose their family members. Mm-hmm. So that's what the pandemic meant to me. It meant life is too short. It's time to change, make a change. It's time to transition into your predestined life for you.
Well, it ain't for chumps.
It ain't for chumps.
Okay, that's why we're here. It's your residence. It's your address right here on the edge. And we're doing it. And we're doing it in overtime. It's like playing double dutch. You know, you got to keep those feet moving and people moving in and out. It's so important. And you know what? If you don't do nothing else for somebody else, do something for yourself. Get a pen, piece of paper, do a brain dump. Just sit there and write everything. What's happened in your past, what's happening 15 minutes ago, the bills that you owe, the money that's come in, your dreams, your aspirations, and then look at it. And you'll find a poem right there, because a poem is nothing but a story.
Nothing but a story. That's right.
Nothing but a story. That's right. A condensed story. And I'm so glad that you, I just got goose pimples here. I enjoyed you so much. I was waiting for you to come, that big old smile. I was waiting for you to come here on the edge and share, because, you know, mental illness, it's a challenge.
It is
a challenge. And again, as I say, and I hope that you co-sign on this, proceed with caution, because mm-hmm. as she said, the people that are just as scared of you as you might be of them. And do what you can. If you see the signs, the symptoms, if you're having them, I'm going to put NAMI, their information there, their hotline. Call, you know, if you have to call the popo, let them know that this person has a mental challenge.
Yes, okay? Please let them know.
If you have guns, be a responsible gun owner and lock them up. If you're a parent, unlock the damn door and go in there and see what's going on in the room.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? If you're paying for the cell phone, I wish you would tell me I couldn't have your password and I'm paying for the cell phone. I'd make you eat it. That's the kind of thing okay? But, you know, on a serious tip, though, there's a lot of stuff going on, and I thank you and I honor you, my sister.
Thank you.
When you get ready and the book is ready, come on, because we're going to do something. Maybe me and you will have a battle. Because I got some stuff I want to talk to people about, too.
All right. That sounds good to me.
Whimsical, fun stuff. Poetry is the best. And you are the best. And again, I thank you so much for working in the field of mental health. Whatever you do from this juncture moving forward, I know that it's going to be a success because you've been there, done that, and got the t-shirt.
That's right.
Okay.
Amen. That's right.
So tell my brains again one more time how to get in contact with you.
Sure, sure. So you all can contact me. But let me give you my website first, which is www.hurtandpoetllc.com. And most people reach me on my Facebook business page, Hurt and Poet LLC. That's all one word, actually. And you can message me at any time. And my email, if you want that, is hurtandpoet@yahoo.com. So that's pretty much where you can reach me anytime you want to. And if I could say this real quick, I want to give four tips that I want everybody to just realize when it comes to mental health. Okay. If I can, just real quick.
Do your thing.
Self-discovery. You know, first you got to realize who you are, what's going on, and all that. And that's the way to open it. You got to visualize your best self. Two, strength-based. Look into yourself, innate strengths. You got them. Whether it's because of your lived experience or it's because you don't know how to leverage those experiences. Three, internal monologue. That's important. Self-talk is huge. And what you say to yourself,
that's right,
will resonate.
That NLP, just remember that neuro-linguistic programming, girl, I'm a fan. I talk to myself all the time.
Yes, that's huge. Everybody used to say, you talk to yourself. Well, yes, I do, okay? And self-care, that's the last one. Take care of yourself emotionally, mentally, as well as physically, because mental health and physical health, they go hand in hand. I'm telling you, they will, either help the other or hurt the other. So that I wanted to give those tips real quick before I
left. I appreciate that. And I have a fifth one. If you got some outside noise, get rid of it. If it is a person that is mistreating you, beating you, stealing from you, cussing you, mistreating your child, sexually abusing them, get rid of them.
Get rid of them. Yes. Yes. Get rid of them. To use all those strengths and your power to make that move, because you are better than that. They can't control your mind.
Nope.
You can't. You mentioned the word mindfulness earlier, and mindfulness is huge. Be very mindful of the situation you're in.
That's
because
right.
if it's not helping you, then if you don't see yourself growing in a positive way, then it's not for you.
It's not for you. That's why we call ourselves brains here on the edge. Thank you so much, Alicia. I love you from the bottom of my socks because my heart just isn't deep enough, baby. How about that?
I love it. I love you as well. I appreciate the opportunity. It was awesome.
It's awesome. So we're going to talk a little bit more. We're going to connect. This is just the beginning of the Love Fest. Okay?
All right. Sounds good to me.
We talk about romance. We got a girl brand.
That's right. That's right. I like your background, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah, that's my dude. You know what? I'll be on one. I'll be speedy. All right, Brady.
I love it. All right.
Your business. Okay, that's what I need for you to do. I'm gonna put Nami's information. I'm gonna put Alicia's information on there. You can reach out to her, send her an email. She cares about you deeply. She wants you to, you know, to thrive. Resources, information, consultation. She's there for you. All right.
Yes, ma'am.
Close to the edge, brains. I love you.